So the Dhamma for today is the five hindrances, the Nivarana. The Buddha's teaching is a practice of progress along a path. And so the most important things for us to consider are those that improve or support our progress along the path, and those that hinder or prevent us, block us from progressing on the path. So these are spiritual hindrances. There are physical hindrances that are not included here. For example, work, study, sickness. There are things that will block your practice, your progress along the path, that are beyond your control and that you have to work out externally. But these are internal, mental hindrances. These are things that you carry around with you, that in your mind, that you have to confront in order to progress and succeed on the path. They're also only really hindrances in a spiritual sense. So these are not hindrances that necessarily prevent you from succeeding in other ways in life, not directly. So for example, succeeding in your ambitions or your desires in the world, these things are not necessarily going to hinder those. However, in terms of simply living your life, the most important thing, of course, is progress along the path to freedom from suffering. And though, so if you fail to progress spiritually, your material and worldly comforts will suffer as well as a result of the defilements and the attachments that rage on in the mind. So absolutely, these are hindrances in the sense that they hinder everyone from finding peace and happiness. The five hindrances are kamachanda, number one. Kamachanda, sensual pleasure. Kamachanda is sensual pleasure, meaning being pleased by sensual pleasure, being liking it or wanting it. This is the first mental hindrance that, again, doesn't necessarily present itself as something that is negative in a worldly sense. So in terms of living your life, finding sensual pleasure is considered by worldly ways to be a valuable and important part of happiness in the world. But a person who is caught up in sensual pleasure, attached for it and seeking it, is like the word they use is, a term is a person wearing rose-colored glasses. So when you wear tinted glasses, everything appears to you prettier and more colorful than it actually is. A person who is caught up in sensuality, chasing after it, will be unable to see things as they are, will make mistakes, will engage in chasing after stress and suffering, thinking that it's bringing them happiness and peace. People fight as a result of sensuality, steal and even manipulate and kill others, all chasing after sensual desires, clearly showing that it is a hindrance to mental clarity. It's a hindrance to peace, it's a hindrance to happiness. The pleasure that we gain from sensuality is making us actually less happy, less peaceful, less content, and less free from suffering, more stressed and suffering in general. The Buddha likened it to water that is dyed with some deep shade of red or blue or any kind of dye. If the mind is like a clear pool of water or vessel of water that you can see into, and that you're looking to see into and to understand what is in the water, what is in the pool. If the pool is covered over in dye or polluted with some kind of color, it's impossible to see clearly what's inside. So it's specifically a hindrance on the path to seeing clearly. Sensuality and sensual pleasure will prevent you from calming the mind, focusing the mind, and creating the states necessary to see clearly. Instead of confronting and understanding your experiences, you'll be chasing after them, you'll be seeking out experiences that you don't have. It's one of the ways by which we remove ourselves from the present moment. Instead of being at peace, confronting the present moment the way it is, we're thinking about the way it should, the way we'd rather it would be. We wish it was some other way. Sensuality will always be focused on something outside of the present moment. We won't be able to be present. We won't be here. We won't be now. We won't be facing and confronting our experiences. So the way that we deal specifically with sensuality, the first way is to focus on the nature of the things that we desire, most specifically the body. We can single out the body as, or physical human nature as the main source of our attachment to sensuality. Focus on sexuality and romance and the attachment to the physical beauty. So by focusing on the body, there are practices that we can do to remind ourselves that the way we're seeing the body, the way we're seeing things, is not honest, is not real, is not accurate. It's not based on understanding and clarity. So as you focus on the parts of the body, the hair on the head, the hair on the body, and so on, the nails, teeth, skin, flesh, and so on, you're able to train yourself and teach yourself to see the nature of the body just as it is. It's a valuable auxiliary practice that even while we're practicing mindfulness, we can dabble in and we can use to remind ourselves and to keep ourselves focused on the true nature of reality. Another one is guarding the senses by not looking around, not listening to music, and not engaging in sensual pleasure and entertainment and so on. We can guard our food, being very mindful when we're eating and not seek out pleasurable foods and so on. We can find ways to free ourselves from the craving and to keep ourselves from getting intoxicated by the desires. The second hindrance is ill will, vyapada. Ill will can also be extended to be any sort of disliking, whereas sensual pleasure could be any kind of liking. On the other side, we have disliking. Disliking is a hindrance, just in the way that liking is, because again, it takes you out of the way things are and makes you think of how they could be, wishing they were otherwise, wishing to be free from some experience that you're having, wishing to change the experiences that you have, or wishing to remove something that is unpleasant. The Buddha likened this to a water pot or a vessel of water that is boiling, that is on fire, or that is heated beyond normal, bubbling and boiling. The mind that is enraged with anger and hatred towards other people or even towards any experience is unable to see clearly, just like a pot of water that is boiling. You're unable to see the contents of the pot of water. Our mind is fuming and boiling and bubbling. Obviously, a person who is angry is not going to see things as they are. They're not going to be able to appreciate and understand the nuances and the nature of their situation. It's clear that people who are angry are not objective, are not acting on wisdom, and are not going to be able to find the true solution to their problems, because their problem will always be to confront and to force and to control, to try and change things to be the way they want, rather than being at peace with the way things actually are. ways we can get rid of specifically this hindrance, of course, the main one is loving kindness or friendliness. When we engage in the meditation to be friendly towards others, to remind ourselves that other people as well face suffering, and to understand that the best way to win to defeat an enemy is to make them no longer an enemy, is to for them to have a good relationship, and to change your relationship so that you're at peace with that person. The second way is to think of karma, think of the actions that you do and that other people do. When you are angry at someone, you obsess over the things that they have done, and you obsess over the person. This person hurt me, this person abused me, this person did bad things to me. And if you look at the bigger picture, the solution to anger is often just to remind yourself that this person is actually not torturing me, they're torturing themselves. I am responsible for my own suffering, and likewise they are only responsible for their own suffering. They too are going, they specifically are going to suffer because of the anger and the hatred that they have towards me, the bad things that they've done towards me. They can never escape those things. I, on the other hand, if I free myself from anger, I am able to free myself from the consequences of their actions. I will be able to be at peace, and one is only responsible for one's own suffering. The other thing you can think about is that, what am I going to gain from anger? Remind yourself that me being angry at someone else is like picking up, the commentary says, it's like picking up feces or red hot coals in order to hurt, use them to hurt someone else. When you've picked up the terrible, awful, painful even thing, thinking that this is going to help you to destroy someone else, this is what anger is. You getting angry is hurting yourself, thinking that somehow I will use this, somehow this anger will make the other person suffer, when in fact it is already making you suffer. The third hindrance is tinamidha, mental sloth and torpor. A state of mind that is drowsy, that is unwieldy, lethargic. This is often caused actually by greed and anger, by liking and disliking. So it can be a result of that. But it can also be a result of things like of overeating and so on. And obviously, we're never going to be able to see clearly or become free from suffering if we're constantly nodding off or constantly dizzy and drowsy with a mind that is not alert. So our practice of guarding against sloth and torpor is an important part of the development of the Buddha's teaching. One of the valuable ways to do this is to, of course, watch against overeating, guard against overeating. So we encourage meditators, or we require meditators who come to the center to eat only in the morning. We encourage them to eat only one meal. And you guard the sorts of foods that you eat, not overeating foods that are going to make you drowsy and that sort of thing. Another way is changing the postures. Sometimes drowsiness is just caused because of sitting too much. If you find yourself drowsy because you're sitting, you can get up and do standing meditation. You can watch the stomach rising while you're standing. The commentary says that changing the postures is a valuable way to overcome sloth and torpor. Another one is light. So you can turn on a light in modern times. In ancient times, they usually didn't have that luxury. So they would use a practice of meditating on light. You would think about the sun, think about the light, visualize light. And that has a power to trigger in the mind freedom from sloth and torpor sometimes. The fourth hindrance is worry and restlessness. So worry and restlessness are often, and most drastically or most dramatically, a result of ethics and morality. A person who is immoral or who has been immoral in the past, or a person who is obsessed with their actions, can often be worried about things that they've done that aren't actually immoral. So if they accidentally stepped on an ant or caused suffering to someone without intending it, they might be worried whether that is a bad deed, whether they are going to suffer, or whether they have done something wrong, feeling guilty about things that they shouldn't necessarily feel guilty about. So guilt and worry and all of these things are a major hindrance in the practice of the Buddha's teaching. Our practice of understanding morality is one of the most valuable ways to free us from worry, and our discussion with others. The commentary says that knowledge will help us avoid being worried and agitated in the mind. Questioning others, getting answers as to whether what we've done is wrong or what is wrong and what is right. And understanding and knowledge about the Buddha's teaching. These are the ways that we free ourselves from worry and restlessness and so on. The fifth hindrance is doubt. So doubt is something that makes us uncertain, makes us unable to face, unable to confront our experiences with a strong mind. Doubt is especially a hindrance because of how it divides the mind. It makes the mind unsure and unable to focus, unable to pay attention, because it is weak, because it is unable to decide on what is right and what is wrong. The best way and the most powerful way to free ourselves from doubt is have faith in the Buddha's teaching, faith in the Dhamma, to not concern ourselves with worldly things, not concern ourselves with the environment around us and what is right and what is good and what is pleasant and unpleasant. To just face things as they are. This is the way they are and this is how we experience them. And it's unpredictable. And it's if we cling to it, we're going to suffer, and it's not under our control. Doubt is especially a hindrance because of how it makes us choose the wrong way. If a person doesn't have confidence, they will never be able to know what is the right way, or they'll never be able to determine and fix and focus their attention on the right path, because they will always be potentially taking the wrong path and potentially even choose the wrong way out of doubt. So the most powerful way is confidence in the Buddha, confidence in his teaching and so on. These are the five hindrances, and these are specific ways in which we face them. But more importantly are the general ways in which we face them. Now there are two ways to face the hindrances. The first is the samatha way. When we confront them with samatha, we just shut off from the world around us and we focus on something else. This is called vikambana nirodha, where the hindrances disappear because you focus the mind and fix the mind on something else. So a person can be sitting in the rain and not even feel the rain, and not even be upset by the rain because they're not paying attention. But the way we do it in vipassana, and the way that truly leads you to become free from the hindrances, is called tadanga vimutti, tadanga nirodha, where they disappear because of the opposite, because you change your mind. So as I said, with focusing on the nature of the body, or focusing on kindness and friendliness, this is a way to change the hindrances. But in vipassana, the opposite is the opposite of the delusion which leads to the arising of the hindrances in the first place. When we face the experiences and see them as they aren't actually a source of hindrances in the end at all. So paying attention to the rain and facing it and facing our hindrances and learning to see that the stress and the suffering is not coming from the experiences, but it's coming from our reactions to them, our judgment of them. This is what we do in the practice of vipassana. Hindrances become an object of our practice. When we face the hindrances and we face the things that are causing the hindrances, we free ourselves from them without having to shy away from them or avoid them or ignore them at all. By experiencing them, giving them their audience, and understanding them, we dispel them completely, because we see that the nature of reality doesn't admit to any liking or disliking or worry or doubt or any kind of hindrance whatsoever. We free ourselves from the hindrances through wisdom. Ultimately, as a result of seeing clearly in this way, we change our relationship with reality, and we free ourselves through letting go of the causes of suffering. Free ourselves from suffering not by avoiding it or escaping it, but by understanding it and by freeing ourselves from the causes. And this leads to cessation and nibbana. So that's the Dhamma for today. Thank you all for listening. I'm sorry about the rain, but it's a good experience once in a while to have to face the uncertainty and to face situations that are not familiar and not necessarily what we would prefer. Helps to understand the Dhammas like the hindrances, where we can see that actually it's not as scary or as terrible as I thought. It's actually just experience, and it comes and it goes, and like everything else, it's not a cause of stress and suffering until we react to it. So thank you for listening. Sadhu.